Morning. Where do you guys get this music? This is like, I was trying to pick which one we would sing at the end, and I was like, well, I'll do that one. Well, no, we'll do this one.
But
before the throne of God above, that's the one I want to. It's hard when you know, it's kind of like anticlimactic. It seems like the sermon is anticlimactic after a songs like that. Last week, if you weren't here, we talked about the word left-handed, what it means, and Todd came up to me afterwards and he said, well, I guess that makes you our sinister minister. No. That would be a great, you know, because I'm left-handed. So I'm your sinister minister this morning. Last week, we looked at who God uses. We looked at three different judges, found out that Ehud and Shamgar and Othniel were three different kinds of people, three different backgrounds, different races, but one thing stood out. They all had courage and they all trusted God. This week, we're going to look at Judges chapters 4 and 5. Hopefully you're reading this. I mean, to read all of chapter 4 and 5 would take us a long time. Chapter 4 is about Deborah, how she judged Israel. Chapter 5 is her song, and it goes all the way, it's 31 verses. It's her song after God delivers and helps her with Barak deliver the nation of Israel. So I'm going to ask you to read, you know, like next, well, I won't be here for 3 weeks, but when we start up, read these chapters for me, will you, as we read ahead, and because I can't really take time to read it all every Sunday morning, but we'll read a few verses this morning, but we're going to look at Deborah. And what I want to look at is two different things. One is principles of leadership. What did Deborah do that helped her lead the nation of Israel? Number two, principles, I don't know if this is a word, followership. What the people did, you know, and following the leader. You know, most great leaders really were good followers first. I really think in order to be a good leader, you have to learn to follow. That's a tough lesson. But anyway, that's the two things I'd like to look at. The principles of leadership and then the principles of followership and through the Deborah and what she did for the nation of Israel. The situation for Israel was, humanly speaking, hopeless. They were in big trouble. We'll read that in a few minutes. But it was, as far as man looked, it was hopeless. Israel was outmanned, they were outgunned, and they were outpositioned. Militarily, they were in trouble. They looked around and said, oh no, you know, there is nothing we can do. And it's kind of interesting what God does. He instead of raising up, you know, Arnold Schwarzkopf, you know, a great military leader, he raises up Deborah. You know, I mean, it's just like God say, okay, you're in trouble, I'm going to raise up a woman. And when they're probably looking like, we want a military guy that can go and defeat this guy with 900 chariots. What are you thinking, God? You know, and I think God does this just to surprise us and say, watch this. And that's what he does. Let's read verses 4, or chapter 4, verses, I don't know, I'll read the first 7 verses of chapter 4 in the book of Judges. It starts, and then the sons of Israel again did evil in the sight of the Lord after Ehud died. And the Lord sold them into the hands of Jabin, king of Canaan, who reigned in Hazor. And the commander of his army was Sisera, who lived in Harosheth Hagoyim. And the sons of Israel cried to the Lord, for he had 900 iron chariots and oppressed the sons of Israel severely for 20 years. Now, Deborah, a prophetess, the wife of Lippodoth, was judging Israel at that time. And she used to sit under the palm tree of Deborah between Ramah and Bethel in the hill country of Ephraim. And the sons of Israel came to her for judgment. And now she sent and summoned Barak, son of Adoniram from Kadesh Naphtali, and said to him, "Behold, the Lord God of Israel has commanded, so go into the Mount Tabor and take with you 10,000 men from the sons of Naphtali and the sons of Zebulun, and I will draw out to you Sisera, the commander of Jabin's army, and his chariots and his many troops, to the river of Kishon, and I will give him into your hand." Then we'll read what Barak's reaction to that was as a follower. There's just two interesting things about Deborah. Well, there's probably a bunch more, but we're going to look at two things. Number one, rather obvious fact, she was a woman. I mean, there is not, when you think about the Middle East, think how they treat women. Generally speaking, you know, if Jonathan's reading a book now, what's the title of that book? Infidel. It's this lady that grew up in Islam and grew up in Northern Africa and the horrible, horrible ways she was treated. It's amazing that God would raise up a woman, you know, and use her to deliver the nation of Israel. That's one thing. I mean, and when people talk about how the Bible looks down on women, I mean, we got to say, wait a minute. You know, you don't read the same Bible I read. Because, and in the Old Testament, in the New Testament, where God says there's neither male or female, slave or free, God looks at all of us the same. You know, I remember I heard Evie Hill one time talked about how the people that study genetics say there's only a little bit of difference in the DNA between men and women. And his reaction was, "Thank God for the difference." Guys, really, I mean, I'm really glad you all are different than us. But she was a woman. She was a prophetess. There's only three prophetesses talked about in the entire Old Testament. One was Miriam, Moses' sister. It's found in Exodus chapter 15, verse 20. And one was Huldah, and she was a prophetess under King Josiah, and that's in 2 Kings chapter 22. So she's one of three. I mean, that's amazing. I mean, that would be, you know, I mean, that's a heavy hitter. I would say Deborah is rather important. And, you know, God did use other women, obviously, in the Old Testament. Esther, we've probably watched A Night with the King 50 times, I think. How many times have we watched that, Amy? A lot. But God did use Esther, too. I mean, but she was not kind of the leader, she didn't really turn Israel around as a leader. She was under the king, and if you've seen that movie, it's really a pretty interesting movie. But so Deborah was a prophetess, she was a woman, and she was a judge. It says that if you read about it, she used to sit under a palm tree, and people would come to her for judgment and say, you know, can you help me figure this out? I mean, who's right? Who's wrong? And she had a lot of wisdom and was able to discern with the help of God. What, you know, people would come to her and say, help us out. And so that she was different than any of the other judges because of those three things. She was a woman, she was a prophetess, and God used her as a judge in the nation of Israel. Let's look through the and again, this comes from, I got to tell you, I'm reading like three books at once, and there's like so much stuff I wanted to talk about today, and I'm trying, if I sound disorganized, please forgive me. But this book about, or this whole idea of leadership and what kind of leaders people are and what does it take to be a leader, I'm reading this book by George Barna called The Second Coming of the Church, and I'd really like us to look through this sometime. I'm going to pull a couple excerpts out of that. I'm reading this book by Philip Yancey called Rumors. It talks about life, and I'm going to talk a little bit about that book. And so when I go through these principles of leadership, just think through how you might fit in some of these principles. Because when I look at Deborah, and I'm going to read something out of George Barna's book, it seems like she almost applies to the all four of the different types of leaders that George Barna talks about in this book. So it was really kind of interesting as I'm reading all this stuff, and I'm like, whoa, It seems like Deborah fits all of them. Anyway, let's look. The first thing she did as a leader was she saw a need and was committed to doing something about it. Look at verses 6 and 7. Judging Israel, and they came to her for judgment. Now she sent and summoned Barak, son of Adoniram from Kadesh, Naphtali, and said to him, "Behold, the Lord God of Israel has commanded, go and march to Mount Tabor and take with you 10,000 men and the sons of Naphtali and from the sons of Zebulun." She saw there was trouble. I mean, we read earlier in that chapter that Jabin, king of Canaan, reigned over Hazor. The commander of his army was Sisera, and he had 900 chariots. They say the chariots were just kind of like part of the army, so they think that the army was probably thousands of people and they basically would come in and take over Israel whenever they were the crops would come in, they would come down, take all their stuff and leave, and there was nothing they could do about it. They had 900 chariots. Israel couldn't stand up against them. Deborah sees this need and says, "Okay, Barak, let's go get them." You know, I'm thinking, whoa, you know, here, and I guess everybody, Barak would have known about Deborah because she was under this palm tree and everybody was going to her. And she says, "Listen, Barak, behold, the Lord God of Israel has commanded this." When she spoke, people listened. So she saw a need and she said, "We're going to do something about this. We're not going to just sit back and let it happen. Barak, let's go get him." Number two, she enlisted help. She knew that she couldn't do it by herself. Really, I think building a team of people, whether it's in the church, whether it's at work, you know, I don't care what job you have, if you think you can do it by yourself, you're in trouble. I mean, a lot of us, sometimes it's easier, I think, if I would just, you know, when something is pressing and I got to get it done, sometimes it's a lot easier just to do it myself. But you know what? After a while, and you get a bunch of jobs and a bunch of projects, you can't do that. And parents, I know you did this with your kids. You know, when you're, say you're going to teach your kids to wash dishes, you know, and there's water everywhere, and they take the sprayer and they're spraying it all over the kitchen. And I mean, when they're little, I mean, Joshua doesn't do that anymore. But you know what I mean? Sometimes you're just like, man, I could get these dishes done a lot faster if I just did it. Would your kids ever learn? If God just did everything, would we ever learn? So she enlists the help of Barak. And I think most leaders are real team-oriented. I can't lead this church by myself. If I did, just to forewarn you, we're all in trouble. We need all kinds of people. And it is happening. I mean, that does happen here. I mean, and that's a good thing. And I'll talk about that in a little bit. But good leaders are aware of their strengths and weaknesses. Even though, I mean, I told the Chris and Steve, Friday was just a hammering again at work. And, you know, where people are, I love when people point out your weaknesses all the time. Don't you? You know, it's just like, make me feel better. And I think it's good to be aware of your weaknesses. Young people, it's good to be aware of your weaknesses and your strengths. You know, don't. In that one song we sang, it talked about where Satan points out our guilt at us all the time. Don't let people do that to you. You can understand your weaknesses. Know that you can't do everything. You might even need your brother and sister. Believe it or not, you might even need them and their help. But a good leader will enlist help. They can't do it by themselves. She then motivated her help in verses 6 through 9a. Let me read 8. Then Barak said to her, this is kind of interesting, "Well, if you'll go with me, then I'll go. But if you will not go with me, I will not go." Now, This is the Middle East. You know, I doubt if Muhammad ever said to, you know, some lady, you know, man, if you'll go with me, I'll go. This is a team thing. It didn't, they weren't, Barak wasn't saying, you know, I can't do this on my own. What he was saying was, I need you with me. We need to work this out as a team. We need to do this together. It's interesting what she says. And is that my phone? It probably is. And then she said to him, I will surely go with you. Nevertheless, the honor shall not be yours on the journey that you are about to take, for the Lord will sell Sisera into the hands of a woman. Then Deborah arose and went with Barak to Kadesh. If you read the rest of the story, it did come true. Sisera was delivered into the hands of a woman. But not like Deborah thought. You know, and it wasn't Deborah. It wasn't Barak. It was Heber's wife. Anyway, so she agreed to go with him. And if you look at verse 14, the other thing she did to motivate him in verse 14 of chapter 4, Deborah said to Barak, arise, for this is the day in which the Lord has given Sisera into your hands. Behold, the Lord God has gone out before you. So Barak went down from the Mount of Tabor with 10,000 men following him. Barak, you're not alone. If there's a lot of things I'd like to hopefully you get out of this, but one of the things we, and I got to get this out of here, God goes before us. You know, when Steve got up and for the prayer, the first thing he read out of the book of Revelation was, do not be afraid. You know, John, you're going out to Seattle and you're going to be on a new job, and I don't know if you're like me, you might be a little nervous. You know, you're leaving your family behind. You're a little bit, maybe. Guess who, you know, you got to remember, you prayed about this job and God gave it to you. And he's going before you. I got to remember that. We're going on this backpacking trip, walking 31 miles, and I'm thinking, I'm pretty scared. You know, and I'm not, I don't want to take this totally out of context. I'm not Barak, but we still got to remember, since the cross, we got to remember God goes before us. And then she developed a plan. This is the part I don't like. You know, she went through and said, okay, you got to go to Zebulun and Naphtali, and you got to get 10,000 men. And that's what I'm really not good at. I mean, I need people to help me with the plan. You know, when Steve and Chris and I got together, we're like, what are we going to do? You know, we got to, like, plan the future. We ought to think about where we want the church to head. So, and then I think when we get back, and then maybe in the month of August, think through where we need to be, and let's together kind of develop a plan, you know. And like most plans, you know, I keep thinking, oh, we're going to make all these plans and it's not going to work out and blah, blah, blah. Deborah made all these plans and it worked out. It just didn't work out like she thought it was going to, you know, but it did work out. I mean, so that's a commercial for what we're going to be doing in the next couple weeks. The other thing, this is in Barna's book, but what I want to do is look at these principles of leadership. He has four types of leaders in this book, and I'll read them to you. And just, you can be nice, but you could tell me which one. Well, I might not be any of them, so if I'm not any of them, don't tell me that. Because tell me afterwards, maybe, yeah. So I don't want to cry in front of everybody. It says leadership styles and emphasis. There's the directing leader. He's values-driven. He's a visionary. He has standards, passion, motivation, independent, assertive. And then his weaknesses are detail, sensitivity. Most of our bosses are like that, right? I mean, they're like, okay, this is the way it's going to be, whether you like it or not. And you go. So there's a directing leader. There's a strategic leader. They can analyze problems. Gary Inrig was like this. I remember being on a board, and we'd sit there and talk about all these problems. And then at the end of it, after 2 hours of 27 guys talking over the problem, he go, here's the problem and here's the four options. And I'm like, dude, you could have saved us like 2 hours of discussion. If you would just would have started out with that, we could have. And so he was really a strategic leader. His weaknesses are people skills, perfectionism, internalized emotions. One of the things they complained about, Gary, was he wasn't a people person. And I liked the guy. I mean, I thought he was. Anyway, the next one is team building leader. Mobilizing, communication are his strengths. Relationships, his attributes are relationships, blending talents, tactful, enthusiastic, optimistic, flexible. His weaknesses are details, too emotional, can become disorganized. And then there's an operational leader. They're managing. They like structure. They create processes and order. They can be insensitive. Anyway, when I looked at that, I was like, man, Deborah had like all of these, you know. And I don't know if God just did that so that Barna could write a book. I don't know. But the point is, when I look at our church, there's different kinds of leaders here, you know, and male and female, and there's people that can make plans and people that can carry them out. There's people that can motivate people, and I think we need to kind of look around at each other and go, where can I help? And where can I fit? Because Bob needs help organizing stuff or something, you know what I mean? Anyway. So think about that in the next several weeks I think we need to look ahead and where we want to move as a church. Okay, my second point, even though I had a ton of points in that first point, is kind of looking at followers and what's our job as a follower. Because even though you may have strong leadership abilities and you may be a leader in your company, and the young people, you may end up being a leader in wherever you God places you. But in reality, all of us better be followers of the Lord Jesus Christ. So you got to learn a little bit, a lot, about how to follow. And I'm going to pull some of this stuff out of Deborah's hymn of praise, and it's after, if you read the story about how they beat Sisera, you know, most people think, if you read in Judges chapter 5, the way they defeated these 900 chariots was the river Kishon flows through this thing, and in the dry season, it's a dry riverbed. And it says in here, in verse 14, I think, I'll find it. That God just had a big rainstorm come, flooded the valley, Kishon River, and the chariots were useless. I mean, chariots in mud are worse than, you know, no chariots. So the army panicked, and they were Barak was able to defeat Sisera. One of the first things that we find out in Judges chapter 5. Look at verse 2. Verse 1 says, Deborah and Barak, the son of Adoniram, sang on that day, saying, after they beat Sisera, the leaders led Israel, that the people volunteered, bless the Lord. What's a leader with no followers? Real lonely, you know. I mean, he's not, you know, what is a leader without any followers? What would happen if Naphtali and Zebulun would have said, no, we're not going? There would have been no leader. So the first thing I think we need to realize is that God, it's kind of interesting. I think God could have beat, well, not think, God could have beat Sisera all by himself. He could have said, okay, we're done, and Sisera, you're out, and you're dead, and I'm going to kill your take care of you all by myself. I'm going to do it. God could work alone, couldn't he? What's interesting is he gives the likes of Deborah and Barak and me and you the chance to do part of it. The chance to do part of this. Could God just all of a sudden come down in this vision and say, here I am, and you all need to get saved? To the, you know, he could just stop the wars in the Middle East and eventually he will. You know, it's kind of interesting. Eventually that's what he does do. But in the meantime, guess what he does? He lets us participate. You know, these kids that are coming to VBS, some of these kids are getting saved. And God lets us participate. How cool is that? The leaders led and the people volunteered. And think about this. And there were three tribes, it says in this song, there were three tribes that didn't go. Reuben, Dan, and Asher didn't participate, and they missed an unbelievable opportunity. But when they volunteered, they weren't going, you know, think about that. This was scary. They were going against an army of 900 chariots. I've never been in a war, but I can't imagine looking out and seeing Sisera on the other side of this, you know, dried creek bed and thinking, yikes. It had to be a little scary. It had to be a little scary. I remember during the Gulf War, the first Gulf War, there was an article in the paper about this guy that was a lawyer, and he was in the, you know, the National Guard or whatever. So he gets pulled in, and he said, I went from 1 month I was in my office as a lawyer to 3 months later, standing in Kuwait, ready to invade Iraq in this uniform, and his commander said, be ready to die. And he wrote this article about what that felt like. You know, the people that volunteered, even though Deborah and Barak said, God has given them into our hands, they had to trust that. Has God made any promises to us? Do we ever kind of maybe get a little scared? We need to remind each other and ask God to remind each me and you how he has gone before us. And the battle is already won. He just wants us to participate. And their motivation, look at verse 31. This is the very last verse of Deborah's song, Deborah and Barak's song. Verse 31 of chapter 5. Thus, let all thy enemies perish, O Lord, but let those who do what? Who love him be like the rising of the sun in its might. You know, they could have said, let all those who fought, let all those who did get killed in the battle, let all those who volunteered. He said, let all those who love him be like the rising of the sun. What is God's greatest commandment? Remember when they asked Jesus that? I remember I did this with a bunch of kids one time in Knot Hole Gang. I said, okay, guys, what's God's greatest commandment? So, you know, kids are like, oh, I know. Honor your father and your mother. They're going to be, you know, maybe I'll get cookies for saying that. What's the greatest commandment? Love the Lord your God with all your heart and all your soul and all your mind. And the second? It's pretty simple, you know. It's pretty simple. There are 613 like the Israelite. There's two, you know. Now there's two. And it's interesting that that's what God says at the end. That Deborah, it says, let those who love him. So that was their attitude. They loved God. I'm going to love God, so I'm going to go fight. I love God, so I'm going to listen to Barak. I love God, so I'm going to listen to Deborah, and I'm going to follow her. And number two was they served the Lord and not Deborah. Look at verse 23. This is kind of an odd thing. In verse 23 of Deborah's song, it says, "Curse Meraz," said the angel of the Lord, "utterly curse its inhabitants, because they did not come up to help to the help of the Lord, to the help of the Lord against the warriors." It doesn't say, curse them because they didn't come up and help Deborah. Curse them because they didn't come up and help Barak. When they volunteered, they were volunteering to serve God. You don't serve me. You don't serve, I got to remember, and you got to remember, who's the real boss. Thursday, I sat across from a table from my favorite client, and, it was a hammering. I had to sit there and go, you know what? I didn't say this. I had to think in my head, pal, I don't work for you. Because if I thought I was, I would have walked out. Their attitude was those who loved God, and they were serving him, not Deborah. There was a couple interesting things that Gary Inrig brought out about this. When Israel had a really strange rule for wars, it's found, and this is about volunteering and who you're really serving. It's in Deuteronomy chapter 20. If you want to turn there, you can. Deuteronomy chapter 20, verse 8. Hopefully I got the reference right. I hate when I get references wrong. And 20, verse 8. This is how God wanted people to go to war. Then the officers shall speak further to the people, and they shall say, "Who is the man that is afraid and faint-hearted? Let him depart and return to his house, so that he may not make his brothers' hearts melt like his heart." It wasn't a draft. When I was young, they drafted you, whether you wanted to go or not. You know, when your number came up, guess where you were going? Vietnam, and like it or leave it. In Israel, they would say, man, if you're afraid and faint-hearted, don't go. Because you know what will happen? That attitude will spread. And I got to tell you, that convicts me. Because at work, it is real easy to bum rap things and be faint-hearted and complain. I think that's one of my biggest faults. God is so good to us, and I better not spread my faint-heartedness. And, if I'm afraid, God says, come on. It ain't about how scared you are. It's about how good I am. This final book I'm reading, Philip Yancey, I haven't finished the whole book, but the principle, it's called Rumors of Another World. I don't like the title because I don't, but what I think he's saying in the book is that our world is so physical. This is really what we know. The troubles at work, the you know, and today was nice because we do have sun and the music was cool, and you know, but a couple days ago we were thinking, oh man, more rain, you know. But this is what we know. I mean, it's physical. All this, you know, I get tired and I get crabby, and sometimes maybe Diane does, and sometimes we, you know. But in this book, he says, the reality is we live in a spiritual world. We are spiritual beings. And it's learning to mesh these two things, this physical world and all the stuff that happens and the fears that I have and the trouble that I might have and the mundane things I do. You know, I mean, it's like when, I'll tell you, if you saw part of my job, you'd think, how can he stand this? I really do have to make, like, we put up over 1,800 signs, and I have to check every single one. That, like, freaks me out. I mean, I really, that's not what I'm good at. There are some people that would love that list and go, oh, I found one. I'm like, I walk by these signs, and if it's straight and it looks okay, I, like, fast, I check it off. Even in that mundane stuff, it is a spiritual job. Studying at seminary, going through a computer program, doing some graphic design, working at Albertsons. It is a spiritual job. In that book, Rumors, it's like God allows this spiritual part. We get glimpses of it here if we just listen to Him. And not get so focused on this physical stuff and think this is it. All of it, our fears, our good times, our rough times, are all a spiritual experience where and with the goal that we learn more and more about the faithfulness of our God. And with that, I've been reading all kinds of things. This hangs on our, it used to hang in our bathroom. I don't know why Diane had it hanging in our bathroom. Now it's in the living room. But I want to read this. It's a Puritan prayer. And maybe I'll get a copy of it and put it out. Because you probably won't get it the first time. It was hanging in our bathroom for a long time. And I was like, I never really got it like right away. But Gary Enrig sent this out when a couple years ago at Christmas. And it goes like this. O Lord, by all your... I'm going to read it in English. It has these and thines and shoulds, so I can't... Those are hard. O Lord, by all your dealings with us, whether of joy or pain, of light or darkness, let us be brought to you. Let us value no treatment of your grace simply because it makes us happy or because it makes us sad, because it gives us or denies us what we want. But may all that you give us bring us to you. That knowing your perfectness, we may be sure that in every disappointment that you are still enlightening us, and in every enforced idleness, Steve, like your mom, you are still using us. Yes, in every death, you are still giving us life. As in death, thou didst give life to your Son. Wow. You know, I haven't read much Puritan stuff, but whoa, you know. They knew something. No matter what it is, even in death. It ought to drive us to Him. Anyway, I'll figure that's the prayer we'll close with. How's that sound? And can we sing that? Last song.